If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn to James chapter 5. We're continuing our study, nearing the end, through the book of James. We'll do this week, and then next week is actually our last week on James, and I'm really excited about next week, some things that we're going to get into, stuff I've never really talked about before, interesting kind of perspective on prayer, and I'm really, really excited about that, and I think that'll be encouraging for you next week. James 5, I want to give credit. Andy Stanley preached a sermon series recently, like a four-part thing called How to Be Rich, and definitely influenced what I'm going to share this morning. He's kind of a mentor of mine, especially with this topic, and you'll see why I kind of consulted help with this in just about 1 minute. So I just want to give credit where it's due. James chapter 5, verse 1. Now listen, you rich people, okay? And it's really, that's how it reads. It's actually like, hey, let me tell you something, rich people. And like a woe to you if you're here and you're rich. Okay, I couldn't get away with starting out a sermon like that, could I? No, people get up and leave. That's offensive. That is rude. James, though, can apparently say whatever he wants and we'll listen. So now listen, you rich people, weep and wail. And the word for wail there is actually howl. Weep and howl because of the misery that is coming on you. All right, what do you really think, James? Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. And so he's talking to rich people, probably rich Christians, and they got their money by farming. This is an agricultural society. The wages that you failed to pay are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who is not opposing you. And so they're cheating people. They're taking advantage of people. They're not giving wages that are due for work that has been done for them. All kinds of really, really bad things. Injustice is kind of taking place all over the place. And James has something to say about it. Now, what I find interesting is that James singles out a group of people. And this isn't the only place in the Bible where they single out rich people. Paul, writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6, says, command those who are rich, and we'll come back to this in just a minute, but command those, this is for rich people, all of you who are rich, come to the side and let's have a chat. This is essentially what they're doing. Now, why isn't he just talking to everybody? Why isn't it about like all of us? Why does he have to single out a certain segment of the church? See, maybe it's because James knew and Paul knew and Jesus knew that people who are rich have different struggles. That people who are rich sometimes have unique pressures and challenges, sometimes face temptations that people who are not rich or even people who are poor don't have to face. And so he says, listen, let me say something to you specifically. Now, we hear in our culture all the time how to get rich, right? That's like the big, you know, how to get rich. This isn't about that. James is saying, for those of you who are, for those of you who've already crossed that line and are rich, and what's the problem? Where's the line, right? Like, have I crossed the line already and I don't know about it? Because the line is kind of blurry. If I were to say to you, raise your hand if you're here and you're tall, okay? And you're here and you're like 6'2 or taller, you don't look around going, I don't know, maybe not talking to me, you know? You raise your hand, I'm tall. This past week, I took a class down in Lexington at seminary, and there was a guy in my class who was 7'2" and 400 pounds. And he always sat right in the front row, too, of all things, you know? Huge. You know, if somebody says, who wants to play Goliath, you know, in the church play? He doesn't look around like, oh, maybe somebody else better, I don't know. You know, I'm tall, you know, I raise my hand. If I were to say, you know, if you're here and you're athletic or you're musical, you know, people are elbowing you, raise your hand, you know. You know, whatever your category, if I named it, you would raise your hand. But if I were to say, raise your hand if you're here and you're rich, you know, nobody's raising their hand. And somebody's looking at you going, tell them to raise their hand, they're rich, you know. And or maybe you're here and it's like, I don't know, I don't think I'm rich. So where's the line? So James is addressing people who have a unique problem, maybe unique challenges, unique stresses. Can we talk about rich people problems for a minute? just for a second? Okay, rich people have unique pressures, things that non-rich people don't have to deal with. Rich people, for example, have to do like estate planning. Have you heard of this? What this means is your money is going to live longer than your time. It's going to last longer. And so while you still have time, you got to go give your time and give your money to somebody to help you figure out what to do with your money that's going to outlast your time. That's a problem. I mean, that's a challenge that you have to deal with if you're rich. Rich people have houses, and like only one family lives in this whole house. That's amazing. Sometimes rich people even have like this, like a guest room that you don't really go in and you don't use and like keep the kids out of it because this is for people that might someday come over, right? And you know, kids, we gotta stay out of this room because this is for people we maybe haven't even met yet in case they come over, okay? That's a problem. It's more to take care of, more to clean and dust. Rich people have like little houses attached to their big house, and the little house is for their cars. And so you can put your cars inside your house. It's the coolest thing. It's amazing. I mean, some people don't even have a house, and some people actually have houses for their vehicles. Huh. Oh, this is a good one. Rich people problem, added stress, pressure. Sometimes rich people, because they work for like a company or own the company or whatever, they actually get like 2 or 3 weeks of this thing called vacation time, okay? Well, you get paid to not show up at work. You get all this money and you're specifically supposed to not do anything for it. And it's a pressure, it's a stress, because then you got to figure out, what are we going to do for vacation? And do we go to the beach or the mountains? And, you know, what about last year? And that didn't work out. So, you know, you got to plan, and you end up arguing and kind of going back and forth. It's an added complexity. It's an added stress. Rich people sometimes, this is one more. Sometimes will take things out of their house and then like go through all that and then put it right back. Like they'll take like a refrigerator that works, that keeps things cold, and they'll take everything out, take it out of their house, and put a new one right in its place. It's amazing. Sometimes they'll take those flat spaces in the kitchen, what are they called? The countertops, right? And they're good, they're solid, they're good, you know, they work. But they'll take them out and replace them in their house as like a construction zone, there's all this dust and debris, and they decided to do that, but they'll actually say to people, oh, my house is a wreck right now, and for the next few days, we got to figure out where we're going to go out to eat, you know? So, okay, these are problems. Now, if in any of these problems, you felt yourself going, whoa, wait a second, that line is kind of getting blurred, because that was me in some of those, and I feel the same way. It's because the line is blurry. It's possible to cross the line and to be rich, and therefore for this passage to apply, because otherwise we hear this and we go, oh, it's not talking to me, I can just check out. But what if you're here and he might actually be talking to you? And maybe you're here and you're sure that he's not talking to you, but let's just read this and go through this just in case someday you might actually cross that line and you might actually be rich, just in case. There are all kinds of studies. Gallup poll has done some things recently trying to figure out what's the number, like when are we rich? And it's amazing to see the results of this. For example, in poll data, they found that people who made $30,000 or less, that's household income, when they were asked the question, what would it take for you to consider yourself rich? They said, if we had a household income, so they made 30, if we had $74,000, we'd be rich. Now, if you're here and you make a household income of $74,000, you do not think you are rich. I mean, you basically think you're a conduit for money. You get the money, and then you give it to everybody else. You're not rich. They asked people who made between $30,000 and $50,000, where's the line? When would you consider yourself rich? And they said, average, they said, if we had just over $100,000 household income, we'd be rich. Again, if you're here and your income is $100,000, you do not think you're rich. I mean, you blow through $100,000 just like that. Then they surveyed and they tried to figure out what's like the, for the average American, the one number we can all agree on would be rich. And the number was $120,000 a year, household income. Again, if that's you, you have kids and you have mortgage and college to save for and cars, you have all kinds of things, you do not feel like you're rich at all. Then they surveyed the top income earners, like the very, very tippy top in America. What would it take for you to be rich? And these people said, for me to consider myself rich, I'd have to have $5 million in assets. And the logic is, if I had $5 million in assets, no debt, then the after-tax income generated from those $5 million would be roughly $200,000 a year that I would get forever, and then I would be rich. Well, I guess so. That would be okay, right? So if you go to the person who makes $2.5 million or has $2.5 million net worth and say, are you rich? They say, no, I got $2.5 million to go. And my guess is if you went to one of those individuals with $5 million net worth and said, are you rich? They'd say, I'm doing okay, but like I know somebody who has $10 million. You see the problem? This is a moving target. We have this idea, and because we don't feel rich, which is what we expect to feel something, then we're never satisfied. And there's always somebody that we know we can point to and say, now that person, they are rich. It's a moving target. I probably felt the richest. You think about, when did you feel the richest in your life? Honestly, I probably felt the richest when I was in high school and I had a part-time job and I was, you know, bringing home, you know, like $150, $200 every couple of weeks. But I had no responsibility, just money. It was just like, okay, movies, and remember those CD clubs you could join? Like, which one am I going to join? What's going to offer me the best deal, you know? But I felt rich because I had margin. And what happens for many of us is our income goes up and then we get more stuff. And it goes up more and then we have more to think about and more options to weigh, more responsibility. And so we don't feel rich. Chances are there are people in this room who look at you and say, man, they're rich. Interesting, huh? And maybe you look at other people like that. Now, if we were to blow this up a little bigger, if we were to go, say, to the world, and you know where this is going, if you were to go to the world and look at the numbers, if you're here and you make, listen to this, a household income of $37,000 annually, you are in the top 4% of the world. Isn't that amazing? 37 grand, 96% of the world is poorer than you. If you bump it up to 45,000, you're in the top 1% of the world's population. There are all kinds of stats about this. There's an interesting story you may have heard back when Bill Gates was setting up his foundation, trying to figure out how to, you know, be philanthropic and give. He's visiting this remote village in India, and he goes in this woman's house. She has nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing. And he talks with her, and he goes out, and the translator, journalist, says to this woman, did you know that that man who was just in your house is the richest man on the planet? And her response immediately, without missing a beat, was, everybody who comes from the West is rich. In other words, to that woman, she looks at you and Bill Gates, it's the same. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, everybody is rich. Did you know that 1 billion people live on less than $1 a day? Isn't that stunning? And by the way, because I know I'm smart with this kind of, oh, well, what about some places a dollar goes a long way, you know? It doesn't. But actually, this number is weighted. And so what they're saying is, and there's a financial term I can't think of, but what they're saying is, what a dollar buys for you here in America, that's what the woman can get with her dollar in Burundi. And so it's pretty dramatic. Another 2.5 billion people live on less than $2 a day. What this means is that more than half of the world's population, get this, more than half of the world lives on less than $2 a day, while the average American teenager spends $150 a week. $150 a week. Average half the world spends less than $2 a day. What this means, and let's just get this straight right up front, what this means, if you're here, you are rich. You're rich. And I understand fully that there are people here who maybe are looking for work. We've lost jobs. We're in difficult financial circumstances. But the vast majority of us, we're rich. Now, I noticed nobody celebrated. Nobody got their phone out and started, we're rich. Ah, I just found out at church today. We're rich, honey. Can you believe it? Nobody did that. I'm really surprised. You're rich. 96%, chances are, 96%, 99% of the world has less than you do. Can we do something together? I want to have us say something out loud, and It might make you a little uncomfortable, okay? And if you get mad at me for doing this, that's fine. Just want to encourage you, if this is upsetting to you, to think about why that kind of bothered you just a little bit. Repeat after me, if you would. God has blessed me with more than I need. Take a deep breath. I'm rich. I'm rich. Okay, no. I'm rich. Okay, one more time. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. Very good. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul says to Timothy, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. You're supposed to like that part. That's good right there. Let's talk about that for a few minutes. Richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. One of the things that I take from this is this. There's this weird kind of guilt thing that comes with being rich, isn't there? I mean, if I were to say, raise your hand if you're rich, and you wouldn't do it because it's weird, it's offensive, it's a personal thing. Our culture, for whatever reason, kind of wraps up money with guilt. And that's not, I don't think, a helpful response. It doesn't help anybody. And I think what Paul is saying is, what's the appropriate response? What's the appropriate response when somebody gives you something? Thank you. Gratitude. God, thank you so much. The appropriate response is not guilt, but gratitude. And let me help you with something. If you're here and you are rich, which is like most of us, maybe all of us, right? If that's you, it's not all because of you. You see what I'm saying? If God is the one who's provided these things for us, then why are you feeling guilty? And I know maybe you're here and it's like, yeah, but I work hard and you should see what I've done, what I've built. Yeah, but I can show you. I've seen 80-year-old men digging a ditch in India who work harder than you, okay? I'm sure of it. And so it can't all be you and me. When we consider where we're born and our families of origin and our opportunities and circumstances, it's not all you in the first place. And so if you're here and you're rich, which is all of us, maybe it has something to do with God. And maybe the appropriate response is to be grateful. Deuteronomy 8:18 says, remember the Lord your God, for it's he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. If God has blessed you, it's nothing to feel guilt or shame about. Gratitude is the appropriate response. If you look back, he goes on in 1 Timothy, command those who are rich not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. See, this is the problem James has with these Christians. The problem is not that they're rich. What's their occupation again? They're farmers. And what does a farmer depend on for their wealth and their crops? Like the sun and the rain and a lot of soil and a lot of things that are kind of not up to them. And so God, you could even say God has blessed these individuals, but they've gotten dependent on their wealth. They've gotten arrogant. They've put their hope in it. They've begun seeing it as a control thing. And this is what Paul and James are warning us against. There's a tendency, and there's a tendency for those of us who are rich to have a sense of entitlement. I mean, if you've been at a restaurant and you've seen this where somebody, at least they appear to be rich, and they're giving the server a hard, yeah, I can't believe, you know, why don't you? You know, it's like, come on, give them a break. And we've seen this in other people. A little harder to see when arrogance shows up in our own lives. There's a tendency as our wealth increases, there's this tendency, and I don't know why this is, to think that as my wealth grows, that must mean that I'm getting smarter and smarter. Isn't that funny that we correlate like how smart we are with how much money we have? And even areas we know nothing about. I mean, you see this. Must be smarter. Must be entitled. If you look at James chapter 4, this is the passage right before the, now listen, rich people, okay? And so this, I think you'll see the context of this really leads into what we're saying. It says, now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we'll go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Okay, the attitude is primarily about riches. It's primarily about what we're going to do to make more. Why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it's the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. That's what Paul says in Timothy. Don't be arrogant. All such boasting is evil. So then, if you know the good you ought to do and don't do it, you sin. You're not smarter because you're rich, necessarily. You're not necessarily entitled because you're rich. You're not necessarily making the world a better place. And what happens in our culture, and by the way, if there's ever been a word in Scripture that's relevant to our culture, what happens is our heart and our money become so intertwined, we actually think that our money has to do with what's on the inside of our hearts. And there's no correlation. And to prove that, you could lose everything you have. It could be a total loss, and you'd still be who you are on the inside. It says, don't let God catch you exhibiting arrogance because of something you have, because of something God has given you to enjoy. It says, what is your life? Think about it. And he gives this analogy. It's like a mist. It's like when you walk out in the morning and you see the mist floating above the ground, and then in a matter of minutes, it's gone. This is true personally. I think if we could talk for a minute kind of nationally, and I don't want to get, you know, political or anything. I mean, there's never been a country like this. There's never been a people that are this blessed, that have this much. I've been reading, and it's going to take me about a year, but this biography of Winston Churchill, and it's like 900 pages, and I think I'm just reading it to feel smart because it's big. You know, I read a big book. And this is a bummer. The other day I was reading this, and I went back to the table of contents, and I was like, hey, this thing ends in 1932. This is volume one. There's more than one volume, which is more than I bargained for going into this, but I'm going to stick it out, and I'll let you know. Anyway, I'm reading in here all these different things, and did you know that America, and I'm sure many of you know this, America was not a superpower like we know of it today before World War II, prior to 1945. I mean, things were going well, but we emerged from World War II kind of like on top. And before that, that's not how it was. And I'm reading in here about the British Empire prior to 1945. And they emerged, kind of took a step down. Prior to this, I'm reading all these things about how, I actually read to Liz, I said, listen to this. And I read how the British thought of themselves, because at that time, the British Empire was unrivaled in human history, and things they thought about their future and their security and their kind of wealth. And I was like, who does that remind you of? And it was, I mean, it could be us Americans today. And it was Britain 100, 120 years ago. It says, don't you know your life is a mist? Proverbs 10:15 says, the wealth of the rich, it's like their fortified city. Keep building this thing, keep adding to it, keep trusting in it, keep depending on it. If I get a little bit bigger, maybe it can hold me up, right? And get a little bit more, then I can rest, then I can be comfortable. And the writers of the Bible are saying that money, more than anything else, has the potential to compete with our heart and our relationship with God. I mean, Jesus says, don't serve two masters. You cannot serve both God and He doesn't say you can't serve God and the devil. He doesn't say, like, you know, what you might expect him to say. He says it's money. You can't serve them both. Don't put your identity there. Don't define yourself by it. This past week, again, when I was down in Lexington, I went to the ATM machine and put my debit card in there, and it did the thing where it takes it and doesn't give it back, you know? And I was just like, oh, I mean, I was so mad. I didn't have any cash. That's why I was going. And I looked at my wallet because I was like, okay, hopefully I have my backup credit card here. And I pull it out, and it expired like June 10th. So I was just so mad. And this was on Thursday night, and I had Friday to go still. And I can't express to you how frustrated that I was. I'm feeling it right now. And I began thinking, what is it that really bothers me? And you know what it was that really bothered me? I felt helpless. I called Liz. I was like, there's got to be a way. Nope, there's no way. I have no money, no cash, no credit cards, nothing. And I just felt really, really helpless. This illusion that we have any control, I was just like ripped out. And, it wasn't a crisis. It was interesting because I had a full tank of gas so I could get home. I wasn't stranded. Lunch the next day in class was just that day was provided, you know. So I was going to have to eat dinner like at, 8 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock when I got home Friday night. Nothing happened. I didn't sleep outside, you know. It was a non-event, but I felt so helpless. Let's say this again. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. And let's add a second part to this. I will not trust in my riches, but in him who richly provides. One more verse, Ecclesiastes 5:10 says, whoever loves money never has enough. That's a true statement, isn't it? Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. I mean, so you get the stack bigger, and then you get there and you find out the target has moved on, and now we've got to keep adding to it. How much peace can you squeeze out of this, by the way? Think about this. Zero. Okay, maybe some, you know, fun times, pleasures, you know, good memories, toys. Maybe you can squeeze those things. You cannot squeeze any amount of peace or contentment or joy out of this. Who ultimately controls what happens to us? God, right? Isn't it funny that we would lean on this? Isn't it funny that we put our hope in this and like has no ability to control ultimately what happens to you or to me? A couple weeks ago, Liz and I were driving out of town, and I pull up behind this Maserati, which for those of you who know what that is, Liz was like, what's that? I told her it's like a $140,000 car in front of us. And then I wanted to see who was driving it. Anybody else do that? So then I pass this car, and I pull up alongside the driver, and it's like an 18-year-old driving this car. And you'll be surprised to know this, but my first words out of my mouth were not, now there's an industrious, hardworking young lad. That's not what I thought. And you do the same thing when you see a 16-year-old driving a Porsche or like an M-Series BMW. What do you say? That's their parents' car. That's their dad's car, you know, they've got. You know, and the parents probably had the thing where it's like, boy, you know, our son, and maybe we're giving him too much, and it's kind of hard, and, you know, I hope he's learning the right things. Here's a Maserati. You know, it's like one of those kinds of... Maybe God looks at us and does the same thing. All these things that he's given us for our enjoyment, we're running around trying to get more, we're not satisfied, we're leaning on this stack of money, depending on it, and God's like, give me a break. I mean, you know, it's like, I've given these things to you. They come from me. Let me ask you a few questions, because this is very, very easy to cross the line and to not know it. And maybe you're here and you've already crossed the line and you're rich, and you never thought about this before because you're looking for a feeling, and it's not a feeling. It's a reality, and you're probably already there. Let me ask you a few questions, and then we'll close in prayer. First question is this. I'm going to give you two scenarios here. Which would cause more anxiety? Okay? Just think about this. Next. Which would cause more anxiety? There is no God, or there's no money in the bank. Ugh. Some of you felt that, like it just kind of hit you. Right? Yeah, where are we leaning? Because if we're leaning and trusting on God and we lose everything, we're okay. And maybe you're here and you've gone through that and God has shown himself to be faithful and you know exactly what it means to trust in God. This doesn't go away. This tension, and you think it's going to at some point, will arrive and it'll kind of disappear. It never goes away. What I'm telling you this morning is never reinforced really anywhere else. Where are we putting our trust? Number two, does the fear of not having enough hinder your ability to give? Well, that's a good one too, isn't it? Because you hear about a need and somebody presents a cause in your heart, it's like, oh, I got to do something about that. But when you get the actual checkbook and the actual pen out and you go, but what about this? And I could write this check and I wouldn't suffer because I have the money and God's given it to me, but what about some future thing? What if I don't have enough someday? Timothy, Paul goes on and he says, not just don't be arrogant, he says, command him to be generous and willing to share. James says it this way, anyone who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it sins. This is why learning to give from a young age is so crucial. It doesn't get easier. I've noticed, and Liz and I have talked about this a number of times, it was easier for us to give when we first got married and we literally had like nothing. For some reason, it was easier. We just wrote the check, and we gave, and we tithed, and it was just kind of what we did. It's getting harder and harder. You know, if you're tithing on $10, it's a dollar. What are you going to do with a dollar? You know, not much. If you're tithing on $100, you know, what are you going to do? You know, it's 10 bucks, right? And you have nothing really you can do with that significant. When it starts getting into the hundreds or the thousands that you're handing over, okay, there's a whole bunch of stuff I could do with thousands of dollars, and there's a vacation and this and that. It gets harder and harder. I want to encourage you, if you're a student, if you're, you know, elementary school, high school, college student, it will not get easier. And the myth that we buy into is once I start making, you know, real money, then I'll be generous. It will not, I promise you, that will not happen. It will only get harder. Last question is this. Do you have money in the bank but no peace in your heart? You guys have traveled. You've been places. We've all met people with like nothing, and they have this peace, and they have this joy, and this, it like exudes out of them. And maybe you know somebody who's like super, super rich, and it's like, it's all, you know, they're stressed out, and they're self-medicating, or drinking too much, and their relationships are falling apart. There's no peace, no contentment. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. I will not trust in my riches, but in Him who richly provides. It's kind of a daily thing, because what's going to happen? You're going to walk out of here, and you're going to go, well, that, you know, ooh, some of those questions. For a second there, I started to feel convicted, but, you know, we got to talk about what we're going to eat. And so that's just the way it works. And so to continually incorporate this into our relationship with God, to surrender, to say, I will not find my identity in this. I will not put my hope in this. I will trust in Him who richly provides. Would you stand and we'll pray? Father, we acknowledge this morning that these words that we are tempted to think are for somebody else are actually directed toward us. That we are incredibly, incredibly blessed. God, we ask for your grace. We ask for your wisdom to know what to do with this. We ask that you would strip away our dependence on wealth, on things, on chasing this target that keeps on moving. God, help us not to put our identity, our hope, our security in things that you have blessed us with, things that have no control over our future. Help us to put our trust and our hope in you, to lean hard into you. God, we ask that you would bring this up on a daily basis. These moments we're tempted to kind of add to the stack and to lean harder on that, that you would redirect our dependence, our focus on you, the provider of all good things, given to us for our enjoyment. It's in Jesus' strong name we pray. Amen.